Blog Talk Radio.
Come on, man. And with the local DBC news, Dennis Cool J with the 12th comeback. More as a but tonight.
Don't call it a comeback. I've been here for years. I'm rocking my pants. What's up with the fear? Making the tears rain down like a monsoon. Listen to the bass go boom, exploding. Overpowering over the competition. I'm towering.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to a live edition of Weigh In Sports Talk. I'm your host, Brian Tarvin, joined tonight with special guest as a co-host, Blair Liggins. How are you doing, sir?
What's going on? Just living the life, living the dream. You know how it goes.
Living the dream. That's what I'm doing, man. Living the dream. So how's everything in the ham?
Well, everything's rocking along strong here in Birmingham. It's a little wet and rainy outside, but I tell you one thing that is not dampering, and that's the enthusiasm and the preparation for college football. I mean, how many days, T-minus, how many days to the kickoff of the season, Tarvin?
I don't even know, man. I don't keep up with it.
Yeah,
hey, I got a question for you, Blair. Looking at,
go ahead,
you're
please.
From California. You're from
that's
Southern
it.
California and big Pac-12 hey. Fan. What is
yes.
the difference between life in the SEC compared to the life in the Pac-12? With a fan.
Well, I tell you, one thing about SEC football is that it is an absolute experience. I mean, it is something that starts from sun up to sundown, 365 days a year, and no one ever forgets it. You know, growing up, I mean, I'll give the disclaimers. I grew up in Los Angeles, California. So I grew up basically all L.A. sports is what I was a fan of. I mean, baseball, if you cut me, I bled Dodger blue. Basketball, I cried purple and gold. I even was big into hockey with the Kings when we had Wayne Gretzky and Luke Robitaille. And, of course, my college football team was the Mighty Trojans of Southern Cal. So it's just a totally different dynamic because football on the West Coast, it's more recreational. Whereas here in the South, it is a way of life.
That's a good way to put it. And I remember when I met Blair first time in Birmingham, it was the wrong time for an Auburn fan to be friends with a USC fan. I think it was around that time, Blair, we played you in 03 and 04, and you beat us both times. And those were the main days how USC was the best team in the country for several years. So it was hard being around you all those years during that time.
Yeah, those were some glory years. And regardless of whatever NCAA sanctions that have tried to derail us from those glorious years, you know, it's quite a lot because we know what happened on the field. I mean, that's the main thing. The main thing is what happened was on the field. And you're absolutely right. During those days, there was a quarterback by the name of Matt Leinart that made his debut in Auburn Tiger Stadium, I believe, that season in 2004, right? Was that not correct?
Yeah, 2003, really. Or,
was it
2003? Yeah, 2003. Yeah,
okay.
2002 and 2003, we played
okay.
you guys, and then 2004 was the year we went undefeated. So.
No, I thought you guys went undefeated in 2005 because you said you should have played us instead of Oklahoma.
You won it January of 2005.
It was January 2005. That's right. That's correct. But yes,
yes.
We went to Tiger Stadium with a little old redshirt sophomore quarterback by the name of Matt Leinart, and I think we played very well. But at that time, your Auburn Tigers sure did have a great team. I actually would tell you quite often how good a team that was with that fearsome force and backfield of Cadillac. You know, Cadillac Williams, and you had Ronnie Brown. You also had Brandon Jacobs, and even what was his name? Trey Smith was the other running back that was on there. So that was a fearsome foursome running backs that you had. And of course, Jason Campbell was your quarterback. You had a really good team. It's just that you know, you ran into a really great USC team.
Yeah, it was great. I was, you know, the year before we played in Southern Cal, and I think we got beat by a touchdown, played very well, and big things were expected that year.
Cadillac had a very good year that year. He had a very good game that game, and Halsey had a very good season that year. But yeah, Cadillac rushed for 100 yards that game.
Yeah, he went out of halftime with cramps. But hey, I'm going to give out the call-in number so everybody can join in on the conversation tonight, 646-716-5564. And you can join us in the chat room. We have a couple people in there at the moment, so it's going to be filling up as the show goes on. Tonight we're going to be talking some college football, of course. We started Monday night. Our show was canceled Sunday, but Monday we went over, Blair, a few of the top 10 teams in the coaches' preseason poll. We want to go through again. We're not going to go in detail as much as the top 10 as we will the other teams that are overrated, underrated. What are your thoughts on it and such? And we're going to go over the Miami Hurricanes a little bit, break down their schedule if we have time. But I really want to make sure we get into going over USC and Oregon tonight. And I know you study the Pac-12 very well, and I just want to get your thoughts on, you know, who's going to win this conference. And maybe give us some sleepers in the conference, who to watch out for this year as teams. Because when everybody thinks of the Pac-12 now, Blair, they think of Southern Cal and Oregon right now. So I just need your expert opinion on what else is going to happen in that. So you ready to get started? Let's go ahead and dive right on in there.
Just want to also add, you know, that if anyone out there wants to, go into anything else, any else sports-related, please don't hesitate. Go ahead and do that. We got a well-versed knowledge of folks that is on the horn today. So just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah, and Trey's not with us tonight. He's going through a little bit. His air conditioner went out, and it's not very good in Vegas with that air conditioning, and his dog passed away, so he's not with us. Chris, Brandy's doing better. She was in a car accident. She's getting better, so hopefully we'll have Chris on strong. But, Blair, we're really glad to have you tonight, man. Really appreciate you coming on and joining us.
Happy to be here. Big sports fan, big college football fan, and, I say let's go ahead and start digging into it.
All right. Well, the other night I had the polls out. I had the preseason top 25 out in front of me, and this is the coaches' poll, so bear with me. We had LSU, Alabama, Southern Cal, Oklahoma, and Oregon top five. Real quick, Blair, what do you see in that top five? Just, do you agree with it, or what do you not agree with?
You know, it's so difficult when you talk about preseason polls. I mean, everything is predicated off of recruiting classes, who you have returning, and just, you know, overall reputation. That even plays a role into it. So when you look at all those dynamics and you look at that top five that you got there, you know, there's no way that I can really argue that. You know, number one, Alabama. I mean, how can you argue that? I mean, Alabama has, they have the most returning stars, I think, of any of your top five that is being mentioned there. At the key positions mainly, and even at the positions where they lost players, mainly at the receiver positions and even at some of the defensive back positions, the guys that got stepping in are five-star quality players. I mean, you're talking about guys that, that would have walked in as true freshmen and started at probably 90% of the schools around the nation. But at Alabama, they're a reserve or they're being redshirted. I think that in your top five, and we'll get into it a little bit later if you want to, but I really think that Oregon is a little overhyped this year. I think that Oregon, losing LaMichael James is going to be a huge loss for that ball club. I mean, yeah, they still got that kid, DeAndre Thomas, that's still there, and he's a speedster. But, I mean, as Auburn showed when they played them and as LSU showed, I mean, it takes more than just speed to win at this level. I mean, you've got to have size, and you also have to have the ability to dominate on the defensive side of the ball. So in the top five, I really think Oregon is a really, really being overhyped. I wouldn't put them in a top five, but I understand why they would be. And, of course, the other team that you mentioned there that I'm very high on, but there's a caveat to how high I'm on them, are those Trojans from the University of Southern California, the real SC, the real USC. I mean, you're talking about starting 11 versus starting 11. They can compete with anyone and beat anyone, Alabama, LSU included, beat them. Because talent for talent, position for position, you match them up, they cannot beat anyone. I mean, they can beat. They can handle and they can beat anyone. Excuse me. But the issue about the USC Trojans is whether or not they can stay healthy, and that is going to be the key determinant on whether or not the Trojans are going to be able to live up to that, to this high billing and all the hype that they're getting, which is very deservingly so. And we'll get into a little bit later why they're rated so highly. But to answer your question about the top five, I think you got to have, you know, your Alabama. I mean, of course, you look to your LSU, absolutely, because with your LSUs, I mean, yeah, they may have lost a quarterback, but you know what? That's probably a good thing to get someone new in there to play quarterback. May actually make them play better instead of having Jefferson and Lee in there. Hopefully all you LSU fans out there won't get too upset at that. But I mean, when you look at the defensive side of the ball, when I look at what LSU has on that defensive line, young, very dynamic defensive line at LSU. And then when we take a look at their secondary, I mean, come on, the Honey Badger, Eric Reed. I mean, it is just phenomenal ball hawks you have on that defense side of the ball. And that the SEC has proven year in and year out, defense wins championships.
Well, you're exactly right. And, Blair, I'm gonna run through the 6 through 10, and out of these, I want you to give me the best team in the top in these five teams, and give me the team that shouldn't be in here. Start with Georgia 6, Florida State 7, Michigan 8, South Carolina 9, Arkansas 10.
Okay, start up. You got Georgia 6. All right.
Yep.
Florida
State 7.
FSU.
Florida State. Michigan's 8. South Carolina's 10, and Arkansas's number 10. South Carolina's 9. I apologize.
South Carolina, 10. You know, when I hear your 6 through 10, the one team that jumps out at me that I like the most, and everyone's probably going to laugh at me, is I really like South Carolina. And my main reason of why I am so big on South Carolina is because, in my mind, they have the nation's best running back in Marcus Lattimore. I mean, when I looked at a running back, I try to look at how would his talents translate at the next level in the NFL. You know, to me, that's what constitutes great college players, is when I look at how they translate into the NFL. Now, you're going to have some great players that are going to be great college players. And, you know, and I can say, you know what, you may be a great college player. But to be a great player, your talent, your skill set has got to translate to that next level. And that's what Marcus Lattimore does. I mean, when you look at him, I mean, physically, I mean, is a phenomenal player. What is he, 6 feet, 6'1", what is he, about 215, 220? Runs a 4.3, 4.4. I mean, good hands off the backfield. I mean, he can create – he made Garcia look like a decent quarterback. I mean, it takes a phenomenal player to do that. So, you know, I really like South Carolina because of Marcus Lattimore, and the thing that's different about the college game and from the pro game is that the college game, you can have a dynamic player have a major impact, whereas the pro level, it's not going to necessarily work that way. I mean, you've got to have more pieces at the pro level. But at the college level, if you have a very dominant player, you can ride that horse a very long way. I mean, you can cash in on that horse.
You see Cam Newton a few years ago. That's exactly what Auburn did.
Oh, it's a prime example. I mean, he's a prime example of how a dynamic player that translates, that has talent and skill, that translates to the next level, arm strength, size. That's what Cam translated to. Can make that impact on a team. And now, what you guys did in winning that national championship with Cam Newton is unbelievable. I mean, but you had an unbelievable player to do that. So I would say of your 6 through 10 number, South Carolina, I think, is probably to me the most dynamic team. Not to mention that, I really think that, you know, even at their quarterback position, I mean, Steve Spurrier has the ability of implementing in these systems that, you know, that this kid, and I want to say he's, I want to say that the kid from Alabama is getting looks for being a starter this year for him, and I heard he was doing pretty good. His brother, I believe, plays for the University of Alabama. And his name is escaping me. If one of the callers knows it, please type it in or call it in. It would really help us out there. But, I mean, you know, he's got an ability to really prepare quarterbacks to perform at that college level. So, you know, I think that South Carolina is really a team to watch out for. Plus, they had a very good recruiting class. He's got a lot of good young kids in there. I mean, just a really, really, really good team. So now the team that I see in your top 10 that probably should not be there is, I've got to say, it's Arkansas. You know, Arkansas is going to struggle mightily, I believe, this year. I mean, whenever you have the disjointment and whenever you have, you know, just major issues go on in a program, I mean, you know, 18 to 22-year-olds will be affected. I mean, there are going to be those times, there are going to be those instances where these kids are going to be like, hey, let's rally around each other and let's then go out and try to perform and do well and rally behind a negative situation. But more times than not, I mean, it just becomes too burdensome for them to perform at that level. And so they lose a lot of focus. And it's indicative of their gameplay. I mean, when you look at what happened and everything that occurred, I just don't see them, you know, performing at the level that Petrino had been performing at last year. Now, if he came back, no issues, everything is rocking along, I probably would put Arkansas in the top five. And I probably am assuming that you dropped him out of the top five was because of the dynamics that have gone on there. But I really foresee Arkansas being a basement dweller coming up this season.
Yeah. Hey, Blair, and there's a game that's on everyone's mind right now. And one of these teams in this top 10 that I think is overrated in the preseason polls are used to hype games up, you know, to sell tickets. The Michigan Wolverines at 8 play in Alabama. First of all, is Michigan overrated? And second of all, what are their chances to knock off defending national champion Alabama?
Well, the thing about Michigan is they have a dynamic college player in, you know, Denard Robinson. You know, is he inconsistent? Absolutely. He is inconsistent. There's no question about that. But as he showed in the Notre Dame game, as he's shown in some other games last year, but mainly the Notre Dame game is the one that sticks out the most to me, is that he has the ability to turn it on. And mind you, you know, SEC defenses have shown year in and year out, they can handle running quarterbacks really well. It's still, you know, every so often, it still can be an issue. It can still very much be an issue. I mean, Alabama had issues with Jordan Jefferson in their first game that they played him at home, you know. I mean, I know Bama fans are probably, you know, going to dislike, not like what I'm about to touch on real quickly is, but it's the truth. I mean, really, honestly, Bama, having lost to LSU, probably should not have had the opportunity that they had to play them again. I mean, it's something that actually ended up playing, of course, in Bama's favor, and it was nothing wrong with it. It was all legal, but it was really something that should not have happened. I mean, the college football is all about the regular season. It's all about what do you do to the regular season. That's why there's no playoffs. I mean, I know there's all this discussion that we're going to a plus one now. It is, in theory, has already been agreed upon between all the university presidents, and now they're just trying to work out the logistics behind it. But as it currently stands, I mean, the regular season is supposed to serve as its playoff. So, you know, but by having Alabama an opportunity to, you know, to get a revenge game like that, was really unfair. Now, has it happened before in the past? Absolutely. I mean, Florida State and Florida did it before. Florida State beat Florida, but then in the championship game, Florida came through and beat them down. So, I mean, has it happened before in the past? Yes, but I just don't think that's right. But getting back to Michigan, I mean, they have a very dynamic player, and I understand why they are a top 10 team, and because of the flawed system that's utilized in analyzing preseason rankings. So when you use that system, I think you have to put Michigan there. I mean, they're coming back with whenever a university has a potential Heisman Trophy candidate or a potential Heisman Trophy winner, a Heisman Trophy candidate, you gotta give them serious consideration. Now, defensively, yeah. I couldn't tell you who's on Michigan's team defensively, and that's what's gonna hurt because I believe that Alabama's offense is going to be a lot better than what people think. Do not sleep this season if A.J. McCarron is getting a dinner. Do not be surprised. If A.J. McCarron is sitting at the Downtown Athletic Club in New York City because of the system that they're going to put in place down there. I mean, watch out. I mean, A.J. McCarron has an ability with some vertical receivers. I mean, he's got some good freshmen that have coming in. And these guys can be very dynamic in the vertical passing game. And not to mention, you know, what they got coming back at running back with Lacey. I mean, it's their offense is going to be very dynamic. But I think Michigan is not necessarily overrated because of the flawed system that's used with preseason rankings. So when you use that system, I think they are appropriately rated just purely because of Jahnaud Robinson and what he is capable of doing and how dynamic a player that he is. But when the game kicks off, in September, I mean, I think that Michigan will keep it close early just because, you know, teams will have, pregame jitters and they got to get themselves into the flow of things. And I think Alabama's going probably, they're going to probably have to ease their way into the game. And I think Michigan's going to come out very motivated, very hyped. I mean, you know, their coach, he ended the last season with a couple of nice wins. So, I mean, I think they're going to come in really, really, really pumped. But I'd say probably right out after halftime, that's when Alabama's talent is just going to overcome Michigan. I mean, I foresee that game probably ending up being probably about a 35-14 game.
So Blair, what do you think, if you were putting a point spread on this game, what would you put it at?
I just told you. I mean,
I know what you say the score is, but I mean, I could say Alabama's going to win by 40, but that wouldn't be the point spread. I'm just asking you to guess. I know the line. What do you think it is?
I don't know the line, but I would probably put Bama at 14-point favorites.
I think it's close to that. That's a good pick. And if anybody doesn't know Blair, this guy can pick football games better than Nostradamus over here. So that's almost the point spread. That's what I would have put on it. I think it was 11 or 12.
Okay.
I think, you know, the thing is on that game real quick, looking at Nick Saban being able to prepare for a game for a year and being able to single in on Denard Robinson, a quarterback that he realizes if you put too much pressure on Denard Robinson, he can hurt you if you're out of position. So if he can escape it. So I'm interested to see Saban, what kind of defensive strategy he puts on this guy, because I've seen Cam Newton struggle so much with Alabama. I've seen some of these big-time players struggle against that defense. So it's going to be very, very interesting that Michigan had a year to prepare, and so did Alabama. So I'm very excited to see that. But I'll be in the Georgia Dome that night watching Auburn and Clemson. But I'm sure you'll be texting me the updates, Blair.
I mean, I tell you that that Michigan game, you know, if you know, I, the best thing that could happen for the Big Ten is if Michigan can keep that game close and somehow make it look respectable. You know, because I tell you one thing, I'm getting real tired of all this Big Ten crap. I mean, the Big Ten, I mean, I know you guys, if there's any of you guys out there that are Big Ten backers, you know, your Ohio State, Michigan, or Wisconsin, I mean, you know, you know, I'm not trying to disrespect you, but I mean, those teams are traditionally overhyped, and every single time that they go up against real competition, it seems like they tend to fold like a deck of cards. I mean, I can go all the way back. I mean, even if we go in the back, you said earlier that you were going to touch on Miami. I mean, go back to those great Miami teams they had in the early 2000s, led under with Ken Dorsey and stuff. I mean, really, honestly, I think Miami won that game. I mean, Trussell should. I believe that the one national championship that the Big Ten has under the BCS system is one that should not have even happened. So
yeah, the phantom interference call 10 seconds
exactly.
After the play, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So when I look and when I see like the way in which, you know, the Big Ten commissioner is trying to state that we must maintain. I mean, I'm a big guy on tradition too, but I mean that the Big Ten is this, you know, conference that must maintain its bowl alliances with the Rose Bowl, and we must not deviate from that. To me, it's just a bunch of nonsense. So, but if there's any of you Big Ten lovers out there, I would encourage you to say something or forever hold your peace.
Well, Blair, we're gonna get off the top 25 here in a minute. Just looking mm-hmm. through the polls, and I'm sure you've seen them. Give me that team this season in college football that could make some noise and actually make a BCS bowl, say, not necessarily just win the national title, but who's that team that could sneak up on people and really surprise?
You're probably not gonna like me, but I'm gonna be dead honest with you, but I mean, Alabama is just too darn good. Alabama and what Nick Saban is doing reminds me of what Pete Carroll and what USC was doing in the mid-2000s. I mean, when you look at from top to bottom, position per position, I mean they do not have any glaring weaknesses. I mean, you know, that sleeper team, it's such a hard thing to call. I mean, I hear a lot of people are really big on Florida State. And Florida State was in your top 10. And Florida State, until Jimbo Fisher shows me something, it's hard to be a believer. I mean, they've got some very dynamic players, but when is Florida State has not shown from their ability to be able to jump over the hump. If there's going to be any sleeper team this season, it's got to be someone outside that top 25, preseason top 25, that I don't think we've really heard about. You know, I think that, I think that you also have a lot of people that are really big on Clemson. I think people think that Clemson is going to come up and play really well this season. And, I mean, you know, with some of their young, dynamic offensive players. I mean, they have a lot of good, young, dynamic offensive weapons. But, we're going to have a great college football year. We're going to have a lot of great upsets, It's going to be really fun, but when I look at from top to bottom, I just don't see anyone really truly challenging Alabama. Now, mind you, as the season progresses, as I see them play, as I'm able to analyze them as they play, you know, that can change. But when I look at it on paper, and when I turn on that NCAA 2013, and I just let it play on my Xbox 360, you cannot stop them boys from Bama.
Well, I think you made a good point earlier about Bama. I think, you know, when you hear Alabama, everybody thinks defense. But I think this season, the thing that's going to surprise people, kind of like last year, was how good the offense is. These guys are going to be playing behind probably the best, most experienced offensive line in the country with a stable of talented running backs. and a quarterback this experience. I don't know if he'll get a dinner, like you said. I just can't see him getting a dinner, but you never know. But I think Alabama is going to be good. Can anybody contend with them? Sure, I think LSU. I think, you know, you have Southern Cal possibly. I mean, there's some teams in there that can get it. But right now, if I had to rank my two best teams in the country right now, I would have to put Alabama 1 and LSU 2. And I know you might want Southern Cal a little bit higher than that, but I have to see their depth, see how they're going to play. You know, the Pac-12 is not a very physical conference, as you know, Blair, so it's just –
when you say not physical conference, it's different philosophies in football, okay? Here in the South, SEC football is all about, let me take my best athletes, my best players, and let me put them on the defensive side of the ball. Well, where I'm from on the West Coast, we took all our best athletes and we put them on the offensive side of the ball because it's all about scoring points. It's all about offense. I mean, that is what Pac-12 football, founded on. I mean, when you look at the litany of offensive players, the litany of Heisman Trophy winners, the litany, I mean, it's just, it goes, we can go on and on and on from the history of the Pac-12, before the Pac-10, then before that, the Pac-8. So, I mean, it's all about philosophy. So, you know, the best, you know, when you look at a team that's physical, I mean, I understand why you say that. But it's just, I think that's where the focus is on. I mean, as SEC has shown, that has been the right focus to do because, every one of the last, five or is it six, whatever, I think maybe five national champions have come from this conference out here. So, you know, that philosophy is shown to be very productive. But, you know, I mean, those USC teams in the mid-2000s were quite physical. The USC teams in the early 2000s was quite physical. I mean, you had some real physical players on those teams. You know, so as a dynamic, you know, of whether or not that they're going to be physical or not, I mean, it's possible. But, I mean, you know, I know why you're saying it. I just want to also make sure, you know, you realize that that's where the focus is on for the SEC. So that's why that level of physicality is seen so much.
Well, Blair, I'm going to cut you off real quick. We're going to go to the phone line, area code 985. Who's this and where are you calling from?
Hey, Brian. It's Janine from New Orleans, Louisiana, War Eagle.
War Eagle. Janine, what's going on tonight?
Oh, not a whole lot. I was listening a little bit, and I was hearing y'all talk about who's going to be a real big contender. Like I said the other night, I'm not calling tonight to slam LSU like I did the other night. But I just wanted to say that I think you're right. I think Alabama is a major, major contender. And I know that my friend Wayne will like that very much, won't you, Wayne? He wanted me to give a shout-out to him. But anyway, I know that Alabama and LSU are going to be both big, you know, your big two contenders in the SEC. I do hope that Auburn will throw a challenge in there, you know, hoping that we'll be pretty good this year. I'm hoping we'll do better than 6-6 and, you know, what ESPN is saying that we'll be. But like I said, like I heard you say that, you know, earlier that Alabama and LSU are probably your pretty big contenders along with USC. But I agree with you there.
Well, I'll say one thing about your Auburn Tigers is that, you know, your quarterback play is going to dictate a lot from the season. If you're getting good quarterback play, I think you're going to go to a nice little bowl game and you're going to, you know, but I think your quarterback play is going to be really, really big because it's either going to, you know, it's going to either lead to, you know, Auburn being able to go on a good run, or it's going to lead to a very, very trying, difficult season. So, I mean, I think I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I hope you're right. Yeah. I really do hope that Frazier does a better time this year I mean, he did okay last year, but I really do hope that they both step up to the plate this year and do a much better job. Hopefully, with the experience that they had last year and with the practice this summer, that they will be able to, you know, emerge as better quarterbacks, both of them. So I'm hoping we will. I'm sure we will go to a bowl game. I know. I mean, I have that confidence in them, but I just hope that we do, you know, better than what ESPN, of course, says we're going to do. But we know how biased they can be. So.
Well, yeah, that's why I say it all goes to your quarterback play. I mean, because, you know, from having that year of experience that he did have, you know, that's going to, whether or not he's able to grow from that, because he's got the talent. I mean, he's got loads of talent. I mean, he can get outside the pocket really well. He's got the ability to make, you know, your intermediate pass. He can make your vertical pass. I mean, he's got the talent to do it, but a lot of times guys who got the talent, will it translate on the field is going to be the question. If it is able to do it for him, if you get that quarterback play, Auburn's going to have a nice season. But if he comes out a little unsure of himself, he comes out with subpar play, then you start going through a two-quarterback system, and you start if you lose that, it's going to be a very long season for the Auburn Tigers.
I totally agree with you there. I really do. I think it's all about confidence, and I think that you're right about that. And another issue I wanted to bring up, we bring up Alabama versus LSU. I think the Alabama quarterback, McCarron, has a lot more experience and confidence than these LSU quarterbacks do, especially, you know, living here in Louisiana. You know, I'm reading the sports section of the Times-Picayune, and it says Mettenberger already has made believers. And, you know, they already nicknamed this guy the Messiah here in New Orleans. You know, I mean, it's just, you know, every day I see something, of course, you know, living in New Orleans, I see something about, you know, LSU and how they're going to overcome the season and how they're going to, you know, do this and do that. And they're going to overcome the obstacles, you know, next year. And, you know, I think that, like I said, I think McCarron has more experience. And I think, I mean, they have a better team. Like you were saying earlier, Alabama, definitely.
Well, Janine, I really appreciate your call. And anything else before we go? I think the phone lines are backing up on us. We're going to be taking calls all night. I'm excited.
All right. That's good. Thank you for having me again, y'all. And War Eagle, and shout out to my group on Facebook. I'll talk to y'all later.
Thanks, Janine. And I know it must be difficult for her in New Orleans, but just go ahead and have a hurricane for me.
All right. We have a Scott caller here that's next in line. You're on Weigh-In Sports. Who's this?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, how you doing, gentlemen?
Good. How about yourself? What's your name?
Good. Listen, I just wanted to call in because I've seen some of your show information on the social media network, and I just wanted to talk a little bit about football outside the United States for 2 minutes. Can I do that?
Sure. Go ahead.
Now, when you say football outside the United States, are we talking American football or the world's game, soccer football?
There's only one football, and it's the greatest sport known to man. That's American football, and I knew you guys would appreciate that. I just want to say to all of you, I appreciate what you're doing for football, and the opportunity to talk on Blog Talk Radio is great. I happen to be the coach of USA football team that's going to be playing over in Warsaw, Poland on September 1st, and we have an outstanding group of young Americans who have come out of college, some guys who are playing over in Europe right now. So we're pretty excited about what's going on, and I just wanted to share that with you and thank you for continuing to support the great sport of football. And, you know, we're excited about what's going on, and I appreciate you reaching out to me.
Well, I want to applaud you for doing that USA football. I've actually caught a couple of those little games for USA football that comes on, I think it comes on like the Fox. It's the Fox. FCST channel on a Charter cable here in Birmingham, Alabama, and they play different. Like I've seen them play against like Mexico and Canada and things of that sort. So I mean,
yes,
go ahead.
We have We have a connection over in Warsaw, Poland, where we've been sending over some American players, and we're going to be playing. It's going to be America versus Europa on September 1st in Warsaw New National Stadium, and we have a lot of collegiate Americans who, are looking to get a little bit of exposure over there. And American football in Europe is blossoming, and I'll just share with you, gentlemen. We get our American players. We host 3 college bowl games here in the States. And for your listeners to know, we do the D3 Senior Classic in Salem, Virginia. We do the FCS Senior Scout Bowl in Myrtle Beach. And we also do the D2 versus NAIA Senior Classic that was done last year in New York. So we're trying to honor the young men of American graduating in the levels other than the BCS, and there's a lot of talent out there, gentlemen, as you know.
Oh, absolutely. It's proven that, you know, you can find a lot of I think that a lot of NFL teams actually are looking outside of your traditional, you know, BCS conference, you know, the bowl subdivision, whatever they want to call it, schools. And I hate to say it, but it's because they can get these kids cheaper. I mean, everyone's looking with under the salary cap. I mean, you know, if you can get yourself a dynamic player to fulfill a specific need, the thing that's different about the NFL game and the college game is everything is specialized in the pro NFL game. And so if you can be able to find that specialized niche, and you can come out of any school from JSU, from JUCOs to NAIA, to D3, 3-2, D1, I mean, you can find a lot of opportunities on NFL rosters. And as I said, I mean, a lot of teams are looking to those. I mean, look at the New York Giants. I mean, they're known for every year for they're going after kids out of D3 schools. I mean, Kevin Boss is a prime example of a guy who's out of a D3 side school. I mean, so without a doubt, I mean, there's a lot of talent, and it's just a matter of you've got to get out there and play, you know.
What a lot of people don't realize is that many of these young men that have gotten to the upper level of an All-American on a D2 or an FCS level, they might have gone to those schools for different reasons, and many of those were recruited by BCS schools, but they chose to go to that school because it was closer to home or a family contact. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, an academic or a monetary reason, or they wanted to go and play starting in their freshman or sophomore year rather than waiting to their junior or senior year. So I'm amazed at the talent, having been involved in this now for a number of years, the talent level that's out there. And believe me, the NFL scouts, they do a great job. There's no better team scouting program than the Green Bay Packers, and I think it shows year in and year out. But they are at every one of our bowl games, and they really scour the lower levels of college football to find those diamonds in the rough.
That's it. Very good point. We appreciate. We didn't catch your name. What was your name again?
Yes. Oh, I'm sorry, gentlemen. My name is George St. Lawrence, and I'm the.
All right, George. We appreciate that. I mean, because that you make some very good points. I mean, very very good points. And not only that though, but you taking the great American football game overseas is also a really good thing. So keep up the good work.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Well, if you want to just follow up, gentlemen, on anything, just Google CDFL. That's the Collegiate Development Football League, and that's our foundation, and that's what we're doing. So you can follow the American progress, and I hope that we do well over there in Poland against the Europeans in the great sport of American football. And thank you for what you guys do. And I'm going to sign off and let your other I'm going to keep listening, but I'm going to let your other people in the queue talk. So thank you,
George. George. Hey, I appreciate it. Call back. We appreciate you. Hey, Blair, I'm going to bring Big E on. He's one of our co-hosts. He's going to help us out. But we also have another caller from the 404 area code. Let me bring them in. You're on Way In Sports. Who's this?
Jill.
Hey, Jill. What's on your mind tonight?
I love my Bulldogs this year. I love my number 6 preseason
Ooh.
Bulldogs this
Ooh.
Year. And
Ooh.
I totally...
Ooh. Jill, hold on. Are you talking about Fresno State or Mississippi State?
Oh, yeah, both. Not.
All right. Go
I'm
on.
I'm Bulldogs.
And honestly, Joe, and for good reason, when you have a quarterback in Aaron Murray that I think is the number two rated quarterback in this year. He's my number two guy in this year's crop coming out preseason. I mean, he's a dynamic player.
Dynamic. He is everything we're wrestling. I mean, he is beautiful this year. He's everything the Georgia Bulldogs represent, class, style, finesse, and delivery. He delivers.
Well, I think the NFL scouts like his arm strength better than his delivery, but we'll just call them one and the same. So,
Jill, looking at Georgia, don't you look at Georgia number six in the preseason? What do you think about that?
Well, you know, we have a lot on our shoulders. I love Rick, and from a female point of view, I'm sorry, but I love his goatee. So, but anyway, let me say that now, I mean, the scrimmage I watched today, it was incredible. Once again, our defense is the star. They're going to be the star. They've been the star for the last three seasons, and they are cured to perfection. Oh, love them, love them, love them. Allowed only one first down in our scrimmage this year. It was beautiful, magical. I had to excuse myself for a second.
The thing about Georgia is that, you know, Mark Rigg better put it together this year. And my only reservation about the UGA is can Mark Rick get this team over the hump? Year in and year out, he gets top five recruiting classes. The state of Georgia is a hotbed for producing great talent for college football. And he gets the top cream of the crop of it year in and year out. They all come to Georgia. But he can never seem to put it together. So my only reservation about the Bulldogs is, what happens when, you know, when it's for a big decision, you got it fourth down and five, you know, the season is on the line. What decision does Mark McRae make? You know, and that's to me is what the X factor of why I just really can't say that your Georgia Bulldogs are in that elite class of teams. It's because, I mean, you have players that are competing bar none with everyone. I mean, they have great players there. Aaron Murray, the quarterback, is a phenomenal quarterback, but your coaching, how does Mark Rick lead this team, it still leaves a lot to be desired in my book.
Well, our team is more than equipped to exceed all the expectations of offensively and defensively. Mark Rick has a phenomenal defensive coaching team in place, and we have done nothing but improve year after year after year. 2 years ago, we were leading in points scored against the offense. So our cured defense is going to be a strong, bouncing off point to our offense that is already strengthening by the smarts, the skill, and the prowess of Mr. Mark Rick.
All right. Well, Jill, you got anything else before we go?
That'll be it.
Hey,
well,
thanks for the call. And
thanks for the call,
Jill. I
love listening to you guys. It's so awesome. So keep it up.
All right. Thanks, Jill.
Bye.
How you doing, Big E?
Good. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, talk up just a little bit. You there? Okay. Well, Everett, we have Blair with us tonight. He's gonna break down the Pac-12 for us, especially the USC Trojans and the Oregon Ducks. So we're about to get into that. So, Blair, everybody's talking about Southern California. I need for you to tell all the listeners out there, why are they not overrated in your opinion? And I know you're at the stand, so I'm just going to say it this way. You think USC is a serious contender. I need you to break down USC for us real quick.
Well, you know, as I mentioned a little earlier, and for those of you that may have joined late, I think the main caveat about the USC Trojans this upcoming season is going to be whether or not they can stay healthy. I mean, I cannot emphasize enough the importance of how, you know, USC their starting 11, talent for talent, is can compete with anyone in the world. I mean, anyone in the country. I mean, when you look at quarterback play, you have the number one quarterback in the nation, a preseason Heisman Trophy candidate. I mean, probably I would definitely put money on it that he will be getting a dinner this year. You know, all things being, he doesn't get injured, anything along those lines. I mean, and then you look at the weapons that he has around him. You look at, in my mind, honestly, the best receiver in college football in Robert Woods. And not only is he the best receiver in college football, is that he's also a very good return man, too. I think people forget that he's a very good punt returner as well, too, and what he can do in the punt return game. I mean, special teams is part of the three phases of football and cannot be discounted. And then when you turn it over and you look at the defensive side of SC, I mean, you got a former 49ers son by the name of T.J. McDonald coming up at the safety position that can do great cover work. He can cover like a corner, but he can also, is like what we say on the football field, he can also bring that wood. So, I mean, you look at this team, and you look at what they have, starting 11 versus starting 11, is very dynamic. I mean, and not to mention, you also throw into the whole mix at the running back position. I mean, we went ahead and Lane Kiffin pulled a little coup, and it was able to convince the most dynamic player at Penn State to transfer in. And so, I mean, when you look at their starting 11, it really is a who's who of All-American talent. Oh, and I even forgot to mention our other receiver, Lee. Marquise Lee, I mean, as our other receiver. I mean, you've got two vertical threats, and it's another terminology that we use in football. They got that pitter-patter. I mean, they have the ability to get up the field with 4.2, 4.3 speed, and they have really good hands. So when you look at the starting 11 offense defense versus any other team, Alabama included, they're right there with everyone. Now, here comes the but. There's always a but in everything. It's kind of like, you know, a-holes, everyone has one, right? Yeah. So do my USC Trojans. They have no depth. And, I mean, any team that wins a national championship, it has to be a little lucky when it comes to injuries. I think if you look back on any team that's won a national championship, none of them really ever had any major injuries to any key players. But unfortunately, you know, I mean, you've got to have, you know, position players who are starters. They're going to get injured. I mean, the game of football is won and lost in the trenches. That's offense, defensive lines. You got to be able to have the ability to rotate players, keep them fresh, to constantly, especially on the defensive side of the ball, the D-line is what's going to dictate games as far as whether or not you can impose your will through the pass rush and stopping up the run versus you being ran over, okay? So SC does not have the depth in that front line, whether it be on the offensive side, on the O-line, or on the defensive side, on the D-line. There's just not enough depth. And I think that's going to be the Achilles heel of the Trojans, is because when it comes time, when you get late in ball games, and honestly, I mean, I don't foresee the USC Trojans actually even making it to winning the conference. Actually, I think as all the talent is happening, and I mean, I just don't foresee them being able to have the ability to keep enough guys healthy enough to sustain a big run this year. I think Matt Barkley is going to light it up. I think Robert Woods is going to light it up. I think Marquise Lee is going to light it up. I think that they're going to have a very good season, but I see them with two losses, just because it's the game. The game today is just so physical. I mean, I know you think they get physical in the Pac-10, but I mean, hey, they're still blocking and tackling going on in all 117 Division I-A or sub bowl division schools. And anytime you got hitting and tackling going on, the probability of injuries of happening is very high. So that's going to be the Achilles heel of USC, is that their players that they have on the 11, great, phenomenal, All-Americans. But will they be able to keep them all there? No. And will they be able to keep these guys healthy on the O-line and defensive lines? I just don't see it happen. I just don't see us being able to rotate enough guys in on that D-line as the games start getting late. I mean, against your Cals. I mean, Jeff Tedford has got some real good young talent out there. And I think a lot of people are sleeping on UCLA out in the Pac-10 as well, too. UCLA had thrown a lot of good players in that scene. You know,
you
I think you look.
UCLA.
Yep, I sure did. UCLA. I mean, watch out, UCLA. I mean, they've got a lot of good talent. I mean, and so I mean, I think they. I mean, they can give SC some fits. It's going to be it's going to not really supposed to beat them. It's going to beat them next year, and then they're going to probably end up losing. I think to Oregon. And when we get to Oregon, I think more so with Oregon, as I said before, I think they are a little overrated. I think there is a little overhyped with them, but it's tough to go into that Alcee Stadium. I mean, that's just a tough place to go. I mean, and anytime anybody has to go in there, it's just an improbable attack a lot of times. So.
Hey, Blair, you look at USC, though, and the Achilles heel, in my opinion, and Everett, I want you to chime in on this, too, is Lane Kiffin. I mean, looking at his track record.
Okay.
he's done, in my opinion, is leave destruction every path he's taken. So, Everett, what do you think about Lane?
I wish you'd quit taking my material.
What? I stole your material?
That's what I was about to say was, Lane Kiffin knows a grenade. Is he going to drop it, or is he going to toss it to the other sideline?
I'll give you Barkley.
Go ahead. USC has some good players, there's no doubt. The question mark is the coaching staff, and you forgot to mention. I don't know how you brought up UCLA. If you can't beat UCLA, you don't deserve a top 10 ranking, a top 20 ranking. They went, what, 5 ball games last year and made a bowl game and then lost and went, like, what, 5-8? I mean, they're terrible. There's no way they should even be on the field with USC with the caliber of talent they have. The schedule comes down to 2 games, Oregon and Oregon. That's what it comes down to. It doesn't have any bang.
Well,
that's such a weak conference. And the difference between blocking and tackling in the Pac-12 and the SEC is the hitting's a whole lot harder in the SEC, and there's a whole lot more injuries that suffered. USC should be able to walk that schedule with the exception of Oregon. And the question is Lane Kiffin going to screw it up? If he don't screw it up, they got a shot to play for a title. If he screws it up, they might lose to Stanford. It comes down to what, I'm a vine. The coaching, Lane Kiffin's he's like a fungus. I mean, he rots and destroys everything he gets close to. I'm surprised his wife ain't left him. But.
All right, Blair, you got to come back for that, buddy.
Absolutely. One thing about Lane Kiffin, you can say what you will about Lane Kiffin, but the man is an offensive genius. That man can take a quarterback and turn him into a player. Explain to me how in the world did Tennessee come to a Terrence Cody miraculous block kick away from losing to a Lane Kiffin-led Tennessee? Why do you think that the USC
play
Trojans
off there? All he did was play to keep the game close. He didn't play to win that game. He didn't do that. He did the same thing against Florida. He did not play to win those games. He played to keep to stay under the spread. That's what his entire goal was.
Okay. you can say he played to keep them under the spread, but when you look at what that team did offensively, you look at what that quarterback did the year Lane Kiffin was there. There has not been that type of quarterback production that's been done since he's been there, okay, since he's left. And then on top of that, how many – you look at how many great products that Lane Kiffin was, has been a quarterback's coach in recruiting at USC under the Pete Carroll years. It was Lane Kiffin was the one that was out there on the recruiting trail bringing in all these great talent during the Pete Carroll years. Lane Kiffin was the one that was back in there with, with the old with the offensive coordinator, designing the offenses that Carson Palmer did. That he was Norm Child's quarterback's coach and offensive assistant. I mean, Norm Child, without a doubt, great offensive mind. But Lane Kiffin was the one that was behind all that. I mean, you can say what you will about Kiffin. Yes. Is he irritating? Yes. Does he do stupid stuff? Yes. Does he try to cheat? Yes. But one thing that he is, two things that he is, he's a great recruiter, and he knows offense. And when you say coaching, I mean, I don't understand how you can say that the coaching could be bad at SC when you look at what Lane Kiffin has done with the scholarship restrictions that he has had and the type of talent he's been able to bring in there. I mean, you look at the talent that SC has this year, it's undeniable. How many preseason All-Americans are on that USC ball club that have been brought in from Kiffin? I mean, probably what, three, four? I mean, Lane Kiffin is a recruiter. I mean, I'm not saying that Lane Kiffin is the best coach in America, but he's nowhere near as bad as what you guys are trying to make him out to be. I mean, he can coach some offense.
Hey Blair, yeah. I want to go to the chat room real quick. Don't mean to cut you off, but I want to say hi to Bruce. Bruce is in the chat room, Corey Bird, Nelly. There's a guest, Jason Atwell, Jason Humphrey, Jason Minson, NDB Media, and Sonia Minson. But from the chat room, looking at it, Bird asked, why does everyone hate Kiffin? And someone, Smelly, says, because Kiffin is dirty. And Jason Minson posted about, you were talking about how good of a coach he was. He said, no, it was Monty. Sorry, Lane doesn't coach the team, his dad does. So I think that's kind of the thing going around, like looking at it. The Tennessee, they were good and they were competitive, I think, defensively. Like when you said that Alabama game, you know, it wasn't offense that kept them in that game. It was, like Everett said, the punt and the great defense that game. So my question is, you know, Ron Zook's a great recruiter, but he's not a winner as a coach. You know, he's a defensive specialist in ways. But do you honestly think once all this probation's finally over, the dust settles? Because USC hasn't seen the worst part of this probation yet, I think. The depth is still going to
– after this season, SC is going to get hit hard, no question. This is the last year for the last hurrah, no question.
Yeah. Is Lane Kiffin going to be able to keep the job? Or is USC going to go out and try to hire a high-profile coach? Because USC is one of the most tradition-rich programs in history of football. It looks like to me that I would want somebody running that program besides Lane Kiffin. What do you think about that?
Okay. Real quick, I want to touch base on one of your chatters who mentioned about Daddy Kiffin. Monty Kiffin. Without a doubt, Monty Kiffin, the creator of the Tampa 2 defense, you know, the defense that is ran by probably, in some form or fashion, by 100% of the defenses in the NFL. No question, Monty Kiffin is a legend. But you know what? But just like as you have Michael Jordan, the Michael Jordan of old or an old Michael Jordan, I mean, it's like Monty Kiffin, he is not really the coach out there doing it like we kind of sort of think that he is. I mean, without a doubt, he's a legend. He invented the Tampa 2 defense that is used by 100%, whether they're run 4-3s or 3-4s in the NFL, in some form or fashion, they incorporate the Tampa 2 defense into those schemes. So, I mean, but you cannot discount the impact that Lane Kiffin has had. I mean, when it comes to offense, the guy can offensively plan a game like that. I mean, just look at the numbers that Matt Barkley put up last year, people. Look at the numbers. I mean, he's that NCAA record for touchdown passes. Hello? I mean, he's not doing that without the game's planning scheming from Lane Kiffin. Now, I know the way he left the SEC was bad. The way he did Tennessee was wrong, no doubt about it. I concur with some of the people who say is he dirty? Yes, he will try to cheat to get the best player. Yes, he will. I'm not disputing that. But when you look at the X's and O's,
Lane Kiffin offensive, as an offensive coordinator, as an offensive game planner, and when it comes to X's and O's and schemes, Lane Kiffin is one of the best in college football, bar none. To your other point on whether or not do I think Lane Kiffin will be there long term at SC, well, the thing about it is, I don't think when Lane Kiffin first came to SC from Tennessee, I don't think he was the long term solution at that time when he first came in. I believe that Lane Kiffin, with athletic director Pat Hayden, they really didn't have a very good relationship at first because he was a Mike Garrett guy, and Mike Garrett brought him in right on his way out. But the thing about Lane Kiffin is he is really molding himself into a pretty darn good coach. Now, mind you, we'll have to see what happens this year, guys. I mean, we'll see what happens. If you had asked me when Lane Kiffin first came there, I would have told you no. Lane Kiffin is not the long-term solution. But if Lane Kiffin is able to produce something major this year, I think you'll see him sign a long-term contract, and he will remain at SC for a very long time.
All right, Blair, I'm going to go to the phone line real quick. Ziggy, 706 area code, who's this and where are you calling from?
Hey, man, what's up, Brian? This is Wayne Kent.
Hey, Wayne, what's going on, brother?
Not much, man. I just wanted to chime in, man. I've been hearing this Blair guy talk, you know. I don't know where you found this clown at, but I think he needs an interview for the Barnum and Bailey Circus. I heard him earlier talking about Jordan Jefferson, how Bama had a tough time containing him. I just wanted to throw out a few stats from that game. In passing, he was 6 out of 10 for 67 yards, 0 touchdown. Rushing, 11 carries. 43 yards, 0 touchdown. That's 110 total yards. So if I'm a defensive coordinator, I'm pretty happy if I can hold a quarterback to that. And also, he's talking about how the Pac-12 is coming up and is real good. I mean, if you're in the Pac-12, you pretty much have to score 40 to 50 points to win a ball game. The SEC, which LSU was proof in November the 6th, you can score 9 points to win a ball game. That's what football is about. So, what do you think about the few comments I just said?
Well, I agree.
I agree about the defense.
Yeah. All right, go ahead, Blake.
It's quite clear. I mean, without a doubt, and it's what I mentioned earlier. I mean, it's different philosophies out west versus out here in the south. I mean, the philosophies of defense, taking your best athletes, your best players, and putting them on the defensive side of the ball versus out west, where you're taking your best athletes, your best players, and putting them on the offensive side of the ball. I mean, it's just different philosophies. Without a doubt, right. SEC having won
six straight national titles, just to correct you. But anyway, to make your point invalid as far as the best athletes go to the defense, Alabama had the number one safety last year, and Eddie Williams, which is going to play wide receiver this year. That is not necessarily the case. They do get the best athlete, but they find the best spots for that athlete. They find his best need. What his best, you know,
where's he going to play? You got people like what? Robert Lester playing safety. Where are you going to put him? Nick Saban has so many options there. He can take all these athletes and put them anywhere on the field. Traditionally speaking, SEC teams pick the best athletes and put them on defense. It's clear. I mean, you're right. It's not always the case at Alabama because of the overload of talent that's there. I mean, you're going to take that kid and put him over a guy like Robert Lester. I mean, come on.
Robert Lester was actually a three-star that kind of come with a package with Julio Jones. They end up blocking him on his own, so I don't know where you're really coming with that at.
I'm just saying I guarantee he comes out as a starter. I guarantee he starts at safety.
I know he's going to start at safety, but there's going to be two safety positions at Alabama. And like I said, Eddie Williams was the number one safety, according to a bunch of recruiting sources last year. And he decided that he did not want to play defense. He told Coach Saban, I want to play offense. Give me a shot. And Coach Saban said, all right, we're going to try you out at wide receiver. So that's what's going to happen. And as far as you talking about UCLA has a lot of talent, I mean, is that a joke? Are you serious?
I'm actually very serious. If you look at the last 2 years, UCLA has actually had two top 15 recruiting classes. In the talent-rich Southern California area, USC has actually out-recruited SC for some top D-line and offensive line talent. I mean, a lot of people just because you traditionally see UCLA being beat down. I mean, they have the ability to give SC problems, I think, this year. I know as crazy as that may sound to a lot of you guys, I mean, there's a lot of local Southern California kids that they know each other, they played against each other. And just to touch base on there, anytime any team plays another conference team, it's always going to be a battle. I don't care if it's Ole Miss versus whomever. I mean, in SEC play, every game is going to be a battle. Now, yes, our team's going to be superior talent-wise. Do they have the ability to blow them out? Absolutely. But whenever you have in-conference games, these teams play each other year in, year out. These coaches tend to know each other year in, year out. So anytime you have a conference game, it's going to be a battle. Even if it's a Big Ten, Big 12, Pac-12, SEC, conference games are always going to be difficult for teams to play. So you just can never discount any team in a conference game.
Okay,
hey, Brian,
hold on one second. Let me just throw one thing here right quick. Now, I won't keep the fall eye tied up. All right. Pac-10 championship game. Who played in it last year, and what were both of their records?
I know your point. I know your point. I mean,
okay.
Okay.
All right. SEC.
I understand your point.
The Pac-10 is two light years away from SEC football right now. And I'm going to hang up, and all I got to say is roll, tie, roll. We'll see you in the BCS championship game. And it won't
thank
be
you,
USC.
Man.
All right, thank
Thanks
you, Brian. Take care, man. All right, bye-bye.
Appreciate
Thanks
you.
For the call. Thanks for the call.
All right, Everett, you were trying to say something, buddy?
Yeah, he was talking about two conference teams having a battle. The difference is in the Pac-10, they have a water pistol battle, and they actually say we use cannons.
Blair, you're getting some love tonight, man. Welcome to SEC land, where the football is king.
Hey, that's what makes it wonderful. Without a doubt, I mean, when you look at from top to bottom and you were to rank conferences, right now there isn't any conference that has from top to bottom the type of talent and on both sides of the ball that the SEC conference does have. By no, there's no question about that. But when you look at Pac-12 play, I mean, you know, it's a lot more going on than I think a lot of people realize. It's a lot more going on than a lot of people realize. I mean, SC's talent wise, as I said before, SC's talent, USC's talent, 11-on-11. Can compete with anyone in the country and beat anyone in the country, Alabama, LSU included.
Not going to happen, I'll tell you why. It's not going to happen, I'll tell you why. If you put USC or Oregon up against any of the national championship teams,
Let me finish.
With the exception of Stanford last year and the year before with a power running game, that's the only similarity that you can take from any Pac-10 team and compare them to any SEC team. The style of football that's played in the SEC is a run-first, defense-oriented style of football, and that is why they have won 6 national championships. The style of play is different. It's more physical. It's more come at you. It's more upfield. It's more physical. It's a completely different. Very seldom are you going to see somebody in the SEC line up and throw it 60 times. It's a different style of football. Stanford was the only exception, and the only exception was that they. I mean, that was the only thing that got close. Stanford didn't play defense either. Nobody played defense in the Pac-12. And he was the last caller was right. It takes 40 to 50 points to win a game. That's why you're not going to beat the SEC, because if you put Georgia in that game, they're going to play defense. If you put Auburn in that game this year, they're going to play defense. If you put Florida in that game, they're going to play defense. You might can outscore them if they're in the Pac-12, but you're not going to outplay the SEC in defense. And I do agree with the last caller on the fact that it's not always about the best athletes. It's the best position for those athletes. That's a key to coaching any sport. You may have a kid that can throw 96 miles an hour, but if he can't throw it in the plate, over the plate in a baseball game, he might be better suited to be in center field throwing guys out from the fence. It's not always about who's the best athlete. Julio Jones was probably the best athlete on the field anytime he stepped on it, and he was an offensive player. Trent Richardson, if you don't consider him probably the best athlete on the field, there's something wrong. I mean, that guy's a freak of nature. Cam Newton.
Yeah, look at all the other players Alabama had on defense. When you look at the Marcell Dariuses of the world, you look at the Rolando McClains, you look at the Dante Hightower. I mean, the talent that's at Alabama is just it's just unbelievable. I mean,
where else are you going to put McClain or Hightower? You can't put them at running back or receiver. It's 5-260.
Hey guys, we got two callers waiting. Let's get them real quick. We're gonna start with the 262 area code. You're on Way In Sports. Who's this?
Hey, this is Quinn.
Oh, Quinn, was that your dad that called in a minute ago? Smelly wanted to know. What's up,
Smelly?
What you got there?
Hey, Quinn, I just wanted to say I've been laughing at this conversation. You guys have really been getting riled up tonight.
Yeah. What do you think about it?
Anytime we talk about college football, it's gonna cause a riot. I tell you that.
Well, I would just say you guys have been making some pretty good points tonight in the SEC. Homerism between you and Everett is really showing. I think all the points you guys have been making are good, and about how the conferences favor towards different things, like the SEC is a defense-first type of conference, and the Pac-12 and Big 12 are more
I'm going to tell you now, people think SEC is all defense, but they had some of the best offenses in the country last year. So everybody says SEC is just defense.
You can't deny the fact that SEC teams try and build around defense first.
Oh, I know that.
The SEC is a defensive-first type of conference. And like the Pac-12 and Big 12, they're offensive-first type of conference. What was that?
That was Smelly in the background.
Hey, Quinn. Hey, Quinn.
Yeah?
If you look at Alabama and LSU scores against common opponents last year, both of them averaged over 40 points a game against SEC opponents.
And that helps having a great defense too.
When you have a great defense, all you have to have is an
average offense that can capitalize off a good field position.
Well, also, Quinn, you must remember, too, the running game is the key component to that as well, too. I mean, when you have a powerful running game and you're controlling the line of scrimmage, that's where football games are won and lost, is on the line of scrimmage. And I think that's going to be the key point. I'm sorry, Smiley, go ahead.
No, you're right. I mean, that's why I said the running game first, and the defense, because if you've got a defense that stays on the field all the time, it's gonna hurt you. I mean, if you don't run the football, and that's what hurt Auburn in some of the close games they had the year they won it, they scored so quick, their defense was on the field so much because they scored in two or three plays. And, you know, the defense is right back out there. So you've got to be able to run the football and control the clock. And, you know, occasionally that game plan has to change. I mean, Alabama obviously changed it against LSU and throwing me and Brian talked before the game, and I said, Alabama's got to throw on first down. They got to throw the tight ends. Did I not, Brian?
Yeah.
And that's what they did. I mean, but you had to change it because you had two classic, awesomely powerful defenses going against each other. You can't just come out and be traditional in that situation, but you put a team like Oklahoma State or Stanford or, you know,
Oregon.
Those other, Oregon, that throw the ball 50, 60 times, man, you're talking about a massacre against those kind of defenses. They can't match up physically.
Oregon was a bad example saying they throw the ball 50, 60 times.
Well,
Oregon runs the ball the majority of the time.
You're probably right. I don't know the stat, but I'm not a big proponent of spreading it out with 16,000 wide receivers and trying to run. And you know that to me is not a running game. That's a spread passing game. It's just you're handing it off instead of throwing it. All you're trying to do is get speed and open space and have numbers, and that don't work against an SEC caliber defense that's capable of winning the championship.
All right, guys. Quinn, well, we're going to go to the next caller. You got any final thoughts real quick?
No.
All right, man. Thanks for the call.
Thanks.
Keep listening,
yeah,
bud.
Thanks
we'll
for the
see
call,
you next Quinn.
Show. Appreciate the call.
All right, you're on Way In Sports 541. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Yeah, my name's Jason Big Duck Finn.
Hey, so you're from Oregon, right? How's it going, bud?
How's everything going tonight?
Oh, going great, man.
Number one thing, I have much respect with SEC, great defenses and whatnot. The one thing I'm getting tired of is people are saying Oregon got killed by SEC teams against Auburn. The BCS tie game took a last-second field goal to beat us by 3 points. If we didn't fall asleep on one play, that Micah Dyer 30-yard run to the 20, we probably would have beat Auburn. And the LSU game, that game was 6 points at halftime. DeAnthony Thomas, 2 fumbles on special teams, changed that football game around. 2 turnovers, 13 points. That's the difference.
Yeah, I mean, Oregon, I have a lot of respect for Oregon, you know, the way they play ball. And you're right, I had Oregon last year predicted, you know, to play for the national championship, and they were a few turnovers away, and a bad game against Southern Cal as well did them in. But, you know, Oregon's that team, and USC, I can give respect to, you know, as a teams and conferences. And, Jason, do you have the radio show on in the background?
Yeah, sorry about
that. I need you
to
turn that off, please.
Tavito, I have to be honest. You're going to, of course, be very partial to Oregon because it only legitimizes your Auburn Tigers championship.
You are right, Blair. You are right. I've always liked the Ducks.
But then how do you explain the LSU game? I mean,
it was just early in the season. You have turnovers.
Oregon had an opportunity to come out and just show that they deserve to be an elite team in college football. I mean, they had the opportunity. I mean, to me, it's like, I mean, it's clear.
Blair, you know, the Oregon's type of offense they run is all timing and getting up on the ball, going real fast. Early in the season, it's hard to gather that rhythm. And LSU, look at them last year, how powerful they were up front. It was just Oregon had never any chance to really get in a rhythm because of the physical and fast play of LSU's defense. And then the running game, you have four running backs, big running backs coming right at you the whole game. It's just if Oregon would have played LSU later in the season, I think it would have been closer and a better game. It's just the first game of the season, you never know.
Well, if my aunt had met, she'd be my uncle. You know, I mean, come on. I mean, it's like – it's quite clear. It's quite clear. I mean, I have to agree. I mean, when you look at – when you try to spread out the field and really actually, I bet if you look at the numbers, I mean, and I don't know it either, but a lot of shovel passes are done, which technically are passes. They do a lot of draws because they – I mean, the type of offense that's being ran, only person that's been able to make that work has been Urban Meyer when he was at Florida, because he had Tim Tebow, who was a freakish player, you know what I mean? That's the only thing it's going to take. You got, and not only that, but people fail to realize how great defense is that Urban Meyer has. So I mean, you know, I mean, it's the verdict to me is still out on Oregon. I mean, they have a lot of good young talent, very fast, like DeAndre Thomas, but the verdict's still out on them.
Yeah, Everett, what do you think about this situation here, this conversation about the first game with Oregon LSU?
I think it would have been the same result whether they played Alabama or LSU at the end of the year. I don't see them matching up. The physicality and the speed on defense and the power running game.
They matched up pretty good at that first half.
Huh?
First half of that ball game, Oregon held its own against LSU.
Yeah, but, you know, you're talking about fumbles on punt returns. Here's the thing, and I don't know. I know Brian played some. I don't know if Blair did. I don't know if you did.
Yeah.
But I played high school football, and I played college baseball. And I'm gonna tell you the difference. In the South, when you're playing defense, which is where I played, you're not trying to just get the guy on the ground. You're trying to send a message every time you hit him. And, you know, you get some guys like LSU had on defense last year that wear on you in the first half, and then you start talking about punt returns, and them eyes start coming down off that ball and seeing where them guys are while they're coming down the field full speed.
Yeah, LSU was a great team. I'm not taking back the loss, and LSU did beat us and whatnot. So.
Jason, man, we appreciate the call. Anything else before we go?
No, sir. I'll listen to the show online and whatnot, and it's been a great show. So.
Hey, I appreciate it, man. Thanks for the call in.
Thanks for the call.
Okay, will do.
All right. Well, we got a few minutes left, guys, just a couple minutes, and, you know, some interesting things in the NFL. I saw something that showed that Goodell's going to let women referees in the game, Everett. Well, what do you think about that? Do you think women belong on the football field? Because, hey, women, men, we're all equal. But to put a woman on a football field, just think if she gets hit by one of those guys, it could be fatal. What do you think about it?
Well, you see all the time, you see referees getting run over because they get caught somewhere where they can't get out of. And you got a 6'4", 250-pound middle linebacker that's trying to make a tackle, and he's not looking at that referee. He's looking at the ball carrier. And, you know, he's going to run them cleats right up her back, and there's going to be a lawsuit or, you know, I don't know. I wouldn't want to do it. And, I grew up on ball fields. I wouldn't want to referee football. I mean, not with them guys. Them guys are monsters. And you know, because you've called baseball, softball, there's always a play that's going to put you out of position, and there's nothing you can do to help it. There's nothing you can do to stop it. So that is not a good scenario. I mean, you see them getting hit, knocked down all the time, run over, piled. You know, they get caught under piles and legs broken and concussions. And I mean, it's not a good thing. I mean, I don't think that's a good idea. And don't get me wrong, I'm not against women. If a woman can do a man's job, I'm all for it. But that's just not something that – I wouldn't want my wife doing it. Let me put it to you that way.
Yeah, and Smelly says in the message board, unless they were in bikinis, then I agree with it. He wants them to be in bikinis out there refereeing. Blair, what do you say, bud?
I mean, you know, Everett, I played ball, too. I was a quarterback, and I also played baseball, too. I decided to go – Not I could have played college ball too, but decided to go the academic route like an idiot instead of staying with my sport. But yeah, it's a physical difference in the game. Now, if you want to have, like, maybe a sideline position or maybe up in the press box doing reviews, like instant replay reviews or reviewing calls, like now in the NFL they changed the rule where every turnover is going to now be reviewed, whereas before last year every scoring play was reviewed. Now they're going to review every turnover, so coaches won't have to use their challenges whenever they're reviewing, NFL turnovers, any kind of turnover happens.
Hey,
now,
hey guys, Sonia's in the chat room. She said only a sister could do it. Only a sister referee could do it. So that's a good point, Sonia.
Yeah, I mean, I think you do have, you have a lot of, I think there's a lot of roles that women can do, but I think to be an umpire, to be the head ref, I'm not saying they don't have the intelligence. I don't think that, it has nothing to do with any of that. I think it's a physical component. People have said the same thing about women becoming Navy SEALs and not being able to do that, and, they've been able to do it. But, if you want to have a specific conditioning program and if they can pass it, I think legally you have to give them the opportunity. But I just don't think it's something that would be visualized.
Well, all right, guys. We're going to be back on the air Sunday night, 9 p.m. Eastern time. And, Everett, do you have any final things to say before we go?
Yes, I do. I was hoping you were going to give me a shot at a final thought. What do you think? I just wanted to throw this out. What do y'all think about the arm conditioning program that Tennessee's got going on up there for their football their quarterbacks?
I'm not familiar with that. Yeah.
But, you know, Tyler Brady, he's got to go to court now because he's riding a jet ski with a girl on the back and he slashed somebody and he was drinking. Then he was caught throwing the beer bottles at cars off his balcony in his apartment. I was just wondering if that was a part of their training for their accuracy on passing.
I don't know. Bruce is he's a big Vol fan. He's in the chat room. We'll wait on him to answer that. Blair, any final thoughts before we go?
Yeah, my final thought is gonna deal with the Penn State running back Silas Red that transferred to USC. Anybody that thinks that Silas Red's transfer out of Penn State being disloyal or not becoming, I think, is an idiot. I mean, a young kid wanting to get away from one of the most heinous situations at a university that anyone has ever seen, the willful negligence of a pedophile that is so close to a program, and you want to distance yourself from that, should not be looked upon as being disloyal, but actually should be applauded that he had the courage to say, you know what, I want to leave that situation. I think that Silas Red I'm not only saying that because he went to USC. I'm a big Pac-12 guy and like SC, but, he could have gone to University of Alabama. He could have gone anywhere. I think that took a lot of courage from him to do, and I think that, I don't wish any ill will against Penn State, but I think the punishments that have come out from the heinous things that university has swept under the rug. I mean, anytime you have a head coach like Joe Paterno, who basically ran a university, and it was accepted that he dictate policies for the university and allowed Sandusky to continue to be associated with the university, with the program, after multiple instances of things of happening, I think Silas Red showed a lot of courage and fortitude to leave that situation.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. I think you should be able to go where you want to when something like that happens, but only for a specific period of time. The way the NCAA left the doors open for, like, several years, they can leave. I don't like that. I think if up front right now you want to leave the team, you can, but once the season starts, you're stuck. I don't think you should be able to leave. I think the timing of this was bad, but it's all about the kid. But the final thought I have tonight, I wanted to talk about it, but, Trent Richardson injured for the Cleveland Browns. He's going to see Andrews. This could be huge for Cleveland. They were looking to have a great season this year with Brandon Weeden quarterbacking and Trent Richardson running the ball. Without Trent Richardson, I don't know how good they can be. But, again, these SEC running backs, they have trouble sometimes, and I think it's due to the beating they take in college on a week-in and week-out basis. So again, my theory is proven right. Look at Cadillac Williams, Ronnie Brown, Mark Ingram now, Trent Richardson, anybody you name almost in the SEC, they've had trouble, and I think it's because of the brutal schedule they played. But anyway, thanks for everyone for listening. We've had a great show. It was busy. The chat room was booming. The calls were going crazy. So we look forward to a lot more listeners. Hit the archive version if you missed the live show. And follow us on Twitter at WayInSport. Also go to blogtalkradio.com. Look up Tarvino or WayInSport and follow us there. But thanks, guys, for joining us tonight. And we'll see you Wednesday.
See y'all.
All right, thanks. Have a good night.
You too, bud.